for the song to become popular, it has to be pushed on a playlist.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. My name is Matt Landry, and in this 58th episode, I'm here with Tyler Appleby. Throughout the podcast, we discuss project coordination, grants, funding, going to Berkeley in Spain, his origin story, the music industry, and much, much more. We also play the Dreamfest game. Thanks for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast, a platform that allows us to learn more about the music industry through conversations with artists, people in the behind-the-scenes, music business individuals, creatives, and much more. This podcast is brought to you by Eights, a musical direction playback company out of Toronto. And our goal with this podcast is to create a network and to shine a light on all the stuff that is happening in the music industry world, topics and realities that are gatekept, and the people and roles that may often be overlooked. This week, I have the immense pleasure of welcoming Tyler Appleby to the podcast. He's currently a project coordinator at Factor. He was also previously at Live Nation in their events division for over 6 years. So he's got a lot to talk about and a lot of different perspectives. I'm stoked to have him on today to talk. And we don't really know each other that well. We met about a month ago, but I'm excited to learn more about him and to have a chat today. Hi, Tyler. How are you?
I'm great, Matt. Thanks for having me on. This is super, super cool. Love the show. Love all the episodes that, you know, you've put out so far. And stoked to get to know you as well.
Thank you. Thanks, man. Thanks for being on. And it's great. We haven't had your sort of perspective yet on the industry, working in sort of like the funding field of the music industry. And of course, we had a friend of ours, Sarah, about 6 months ago now. So it's been a while. And she's worked at Bud. So and to get your perspective on that stuff is also fun. But let's start the podcast how we always start the podcast, with your favorite live show experience as a fan. What's your favorite live show that you've been to?
Yeah. So something about me is that, like, going to concerts, I mean, I'm sure similar to you. And yeah. Some people that, you know, listen to this and are in the music industry, it's like going to shows is like my favorite thing in the world. Like, I try to go yeah. to as many shows as I can, as often as I can.
Yeah.
You know, traveling to shows, just festivals, stuff like that. So, like, that's a very important part of my life. Mm. There's a couple that I wanted to mention, because I know you mentioned before that we can mention a few, but a few, like, formative ones. Is I saw, or my dad and my uncle took me to see AC/DC at Rogers Center when I was like 10 years old.
Wow.
It's like, as a kid, like, my mind was blown. I just scale of like a rock show like that. And of course, seeing, like, you know, Angus Young ripping around stage and, you know, the legendary act that AC/DC is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Green Day at Air Canada Center. Same thing when I was like a kid, like 12 years old or something like that. Of course, like, seeing that, I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw Boy Genius at the Danforth Music Hall.
Wow.
In 2018, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And that one is really cool because this was before Phoebe Bridgers, like, blew up. So
right.
The headliner of that show was actually Julian Baker.
Yes.
And the way that show worked is all three of them did their own solo set. And then came out afterwards as Boy Genius and played their whole EP. So it was like Lucy did her own set, Phoebe, then Julian, then wow. Boy Genius all together. So it was like, that was a crazy, super emotional, like, very, like, cathartic show experience. That was incredible.
Wow.
A couple others to mention is LCD in London, LCD Sound System. That was an incredible thing. Just like one of the loudest shows I've ever seen.
Wow.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And then, lately, the biggest one lately is I saw Bruce Springsteen in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, that was just huge. Like, seeing him in his hometown, like, I grew up with him and all that stuff. So,
well, yeah, there really seems to be. Answer. Yeah, exactly. And there seems to be a lot of different influences. And we'll talk about that in the origin story portion. But yeah, no, any specific, like, moment of a show that, like, sticks out for you?
Yeah, for sure. There's like, well, I said all those for different reasons. Like, Green Day, DC was like, I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. That was like my first, like, kind of like light bulb moment of like, whoa, this is like incredible. Like, yeah. So cool that people do this.
Yeah.
Boy Genius was like the, like, oh, like you can go to a show and have like such an emotional, cathartic experience, like with the performers and with the audience and stuff. I remember there's one moment during that show at the Danforth where the crowd was so quiet and so like zoned into the show that you could hear like coins dropping at the bars on each side of the Danforth Music Hall because it was just so quiet and everyone was just so dialed in. That was, I'll never forget that. That was crazy.
Yeah. Did you know, or did people know in the audience how special that sort of group, a trio of women would be like years later kind of thing? Was it, because I didn't know, I thought Boy Genius was actually like a very, like a, almost like a post pandemic thing. I didn't even know it was a, like a thing in 2018, as you're saying.
Yeah.
Was it like as special, like as it would be now kind of thing? Like, could you have expected the success?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if anyone expected it to be as big as it was, like
right.
Madison Square Garden and stuff
sure,
like that.
Sure, sure, sure.
But yeah, I think everyone there knew like they were at something really special, and
yeah,
that, you know, of course the talent of all three of them is so incredible.
Fantastic. So
I think people knew, but like maybe not, you know, the full scope of where it went.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a testament to how incredible they all are.
Fantastic. Next question. Is there a project, campaign, era that would best represent your work as Tyler Appleby? I know, I've asked this question many times to artists, and they mention eras or albums. I'm interested in your answer to this question. Is there a project, campaign, era that would best represent your work?
Yeah. So like in terms of like that, like, you know, I'm not an artist myself. So like,
yeah, exactly.
There's nothing that's like really influenced, like, you know, my work, I guess, my career in terms of like, you know, like output.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like listening to like the Valley group on here, like,
sure.
Of course, like their answer is going to be so different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, there's not like one specific project or campaign that really like influenced me. There's a few that like, I think are really interesting. Like in 2016, one of the albums that like really changed my life and like, you know, showed me that like music is like such a powerful thing. And, you know, especially like as an adult, like moving beyond the like AC/DC Green Day experience into like something that's a little more, you know, just meant a little bit more to me, like growing up, was,
yeah,
Bon Iver released 22 a Million in 2016.
Yeah.
And what made that so interesting is that like the lead singer, Justin Vernon, wasn't on any of the marketing. Like they didn't really promote the album at all. It was just very cryptic, like a lot of like with weird symbols, and like a lot of the songs were also very cryptic and like very like, I mean, his lyricism is, you know, already very, very cryptic, but
yeah.
Just the fact that they just released that album and there wasn't really a lot put behind it. Like he didn't want to like do the full promotion and like put his face behind anything, but the album just came out and just like, you know, was what it was. And
yeah, totally.
Talking to a lot of like artists and music people, like that's one of the albums too for them that like really changed their life and really inspired them and really, you know, made them want to pursue music, whether it's,
yeah,
in the creative lane way or like in a more business driven lane way. So just that, I think, is really, it was one of them for sure.
Fantastic. No, I remember when that album came out, and it was so different than what he had previously put out on his first two records. And just like the atmospheric component of 22 million and the vocal processing and the sense. And I still go back on the NPR performance of that record.
It's pretty nuts.
Two drummers, if I remember correctly. And it really changed my life.
Same here.
Fantastic. Going on to the Joni Mitchell quote. For those who know the podcast, we do a quote segment. Last year was the Erykah Badu quote comparing music and music business. This year is the Joni Mitchell quote, and here it is. She says, in 2004, she says, I heard someone from the music business saying they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. This was his, in 2004, as I said, in an interview with Robert Hilburn of the LA Times. Now, She doesn't necessarily agree with this. She goes on later in the in the interview. But again, the quote is, "I heard someone from the music business saying they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate." Tyler, what are your first instincts on the quote?
Well, I mean, it's a super powerful quote.
Yeah.
And especially coming from an artist as outspoken and, you know, like music, you know, of course, like music was always the biggest thing for her. It was never like as much the image and never as much the corporation aspect of it or the commercial aspect of it.
Totally.
Like Johnny, that I think that's a really important, powerful quote.
Mm-hmm.
My thought of it is like I feel like that's always sort of been the case in a lot of ways. Like going back like to the 50s and seeing like the rise of Elvis and like how he was treated by his manager. And of course the talent is always usually there. And, you know, of course, obviously with Elvis, it was there, but seeing that
right.
how sort of manipulated and stuff like that, how, you know, back then a lot that happened to a lot of artists, but of course Elvis is like sort of the shining case of that.
Yeah.
And going into like the 80s and 90s with like George Michael and Prince and how they were treated differently by their labels when they weren't willing to cooperate, or not even not willing to cooperate, but when they wanted to sort of have some of their own power and, you know, have their own say in a lot of things, how that was just sort of shut down immediately.
Yeah.
To then now how like with the whole, you know, TikTokification, I guess, if you want to say that, of music and, you know, just rising and emerging artists, like we've seen so many artists in the last handful of years be signed or scouted or, you know, picked up by somebody because of they fit this specific look.
Yeah.
Or the specific, you know, algorithm or something that they're looking for specifically, which of course isn't the artist's fault. They just happens to fall that way. And some of the artists really work out and some of them really don't. And again, it's not the artist's fault. It's just sort of the way that the industry's gone the last little bit where you know, they're all talented. They're all very talented, but they're looking for who like maybe don't have the like foundations yet because they're so new. Don't really know what their voice is. They don't know what the music is that they're trying to create and put out in the world. They don't really know who they are yet, really, as people.
Yeah.
And are being, you know, scooped up to these deals, and because they look a certain way, or because they cooperate, or because they tick so many of the other commercial boxes that, you know, some other artists may not have and may go unnoticed. And yeah, I think it's just like that quote that Joni has is like kind of evolved in so many different ways, and it can be interpreted in so many different ways.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And you bring up something that I've never talked about before on this podcast, where it's like, because you bring up they're all talented, as in all most artists that are even in the prospect of quote unquote making it are all talented, as you said. So it's like, okay, now the industry are looking for more than just the talent, because people are writing songs, great songs, they have the talent and stuff, but what else can an artist sort of add to make them sort of stand out, is an interesting way to look at it. That's great. How is the business part of music viewed on, your end of things? From your sort of role, and also not to spoil the origin story, but you did also go to Berkeley for music business. So I really want to know about these upcoming questions here. How is the business part viewed on your end of things? And I know you're a huge music fan as well, just and the art form of it. Where do you stand on the business part of the music industry?
It's a big question.
Yeah, I know.
Where do I stand on the business part of the music industry?
Yeah.
I don't really know. That's a good question.
Maybe like how do you feel about it? Like as somebody who's also went to university for music business, I don't know if I'm like jaded, you know, not yet anyway. How do you feel about where you're at currently?
Where I'm at currently. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel pretty good about it. I mean, the music industry is like always changing, as we all know.
Yeah.
There's like, it's so hard to keep up with everything that's going on. And then I feel like when you do feel like you're caught up, then like something brand new is thrown at you.
Yes.
And then there's, you know, it's an industry that keeps reinventing itself and finding new ways to, you know, just keep evolving, I guess. Like there's always new revenue streams. There's always new things that are happening in the industry that makes it really kind of hard to keep up. But in terms of like where I'm at, like, I don't know, I feel like it's a pretty good industry to be in. Like it's
good.
Like super rewarding and you know, there's so many cool creative people in this industry, as we all know. And I mean, I feel good to be in it. I feel like, of course, we're going to touch on this in a little bit, but like being at Factor and like seeing all the talent that's, you know, just in Canada specifically is super inspiring. And hopefully seeing a lot of these artists like go on to become like big names or like just, you know, successful names is super inspiring. And sort of the reason why I'm in it in the first place is I've just, you know, a big thing for me is like wanting to help artists with their creative passions and their projects, putting them out in the world and, you know, hopefully creating experiences for music fans that are similar to ones that I maybe had as a kid where, you know, listening to certain things for the first time and have that kind of inspire me and change my life in a lot of ways. That's where I'm, that's sort of my motto. And that's why I think being in this industry can be really rewarding and can feel really cool.
That's fantastic. I mean, I have very similar ways of thinking about it in regards to like, I want people to have the same experiences that I did when I was a kid, you know, and sort of reflecting that. And it's great to hear it from your end of things as well, from more of the Factor role now in regards to funding and helping artists, you know, inspire others. Anyway, it's really great. Where do you think, you talk about always feeling like the industry's moving. And I totally agree. It's always, you know, when you start getting bored, it feels like there's something completely new that changes the game completely. Where do you think the music industry is going? And are you seeing some new developments in the industry that you're interested in?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so many things to mention. There's so many things to bring up.
Please.
I think one really important thing to bring up, especially looking at like the live side of it, is a lot of artists and artist teams and labels and, you know, all the major stakeholders that go into live music are now, they now seem to be taking a much stronger stance on mental health, especially when it comes to artists.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, a good example is you look at an artist like Lizzie McAlpine, who in the past has like canceled or postponed dates because of like mental health reasons, stuff like that. Of course, all like makes a lot of sense and, you know, is very understandable in a lot of ways. And she recently just announced her tour, upcoming summer tour, and she was able to do it in a way where she could hit a lot of the major cities, but it's more spread out.
Yes.
So less of a toll on not just her, but her tour, her, the people around her, everyone involved. It just takes less of a toll on them and it just makes it more realistic and more enjoyable. And I just think the fact that like that's finally like a focus, especially for a lot of these young artists who have like, you know, kind of blown up in the last couple of years, I think that's such an important thing. And I think like laying that foundation now allowing that to be a realistic thing for artists to do, I think is super important.
That's fantastic.
That's for sure a major one for me.
I think, you know, I think about Lizzie, I think about Sean as well, canceled Sean Mendes, that canceled like a whole bunch of touring, Justin Bieber as well. I think it's really important, and I believe that some unions as well have like sort of implemented some stuff for like the tech side of things in regards to like hours, you know, at a venue or and stuff like that. I agree that that mental health and just like health in general will have a huge impact on the live industry, because it's been so grueling. And I think it's great. Any other little developments that you're seeing?
I think it's interesting seeing like what happened with UMG and TikTok. I think that's
a
conversation you could have an entire podcast just about that.
Yeah, totally.
Like what that means for artists and for labels and for TikTok as a platform. And
yeah,
I think that's a really interesting discussion point. Like just going from, you know, artists kind of being like told and by whoever, really, by TikTok, by labels, by managers, by whoever, that like they gotta be on TikTok, they gotta, you know, promote on TikTok, they gotta do this and that, and then their song becomes famous or, you know, perhaps blows up because of TikTok, and then all of a sudden it's gone. Like you can't do it on TikTok anymore.
That's crazy.
I think that's such a wild thing that happened.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Especially, and now talking to artists about it, and you mentioned the two Valley podcasts that I had with Rob and Kara a few weeks ago as well. They talked about, and this was, I believe it was pre TikTok, UMG taking all the songs down, or all their songs down rather. But they were talking about how like the marketing platform of label now, or the marketing strategy rather, is all about social media, and they all put it sort of in the artist's hands. It's almost like the label doesn't necessarily have a hand in marketing right now, which is crazy, because I believe for the past like 10 to 15 years, labels have become more of a bank and a marketing sort of firm for labels. Sort of almost only that, aside from their connections. And it's just wild to see that this label, this huge label, took all the music down when that is like literally their number one marketing strategy. It's really interesting. Now it's also empowering, I feel like, to the artists.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, some discussions to have around that. What do you feel? How do you feel about that whole side of things? Artists, sort of the label starts almost standing up for their own artists in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really interesting, the whole thing. And of course, like hearing like what Kara and Rob had to say about it, I think is really unique. And of course, a perspective that I just don't have, like hearing it from them, I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
I think like empowering their artists is obviously like, that's a big thing that labels should be doing, especially when such a big promotional tool is just taken away from them. I think that's, I think that's really important. I think one of the really interesting ways about, or interesting things about this too, is that perhaps, you know, I don't know, I've just seen a lot of young artists recently sort of fall into the trap, I guess.
Yeah.
Is the way to say it? Having to like sort of design or write a song or something like for TikTok. Like we need the song as like a mechanism to create content for TikTok. That will then, you know, hopefully engage with random people around the world that will then bring them to my music. Yes. And now that that's gone, I think that a lot of artists are like, while they may not all change their approach, I think it's going to force a lot of young artists to sort of reevaluate, I guess, and just like think about like, why am I doing this in the first place? Like,
yeah,
what do I have to say? Like, what am I trying to say? What do I want to say?
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the end of the day, like it could create a shift where like artists are kind of going back to the way it used to be beforehand, before social media, where they're like forced to just like, okay, let's just focus on writing a really amazing, genuine, authentic song.
Yeah.
As opposed to creating something that fits the algorithm and, you know, sort of going back to the Joni quote again, of like creating something that, you know, is less about like the talent, I guess, and more about how it fits in and the grand scheme of things and how it fits into like someone's model.
Yeah.
I think that's a really like inspiring and empowering thing too for artists, is like, okay, now that this is perhaps taken away, I can actually be who I want it to be as an artist.
Yes.
And I don't have to.
Yes.
I don't have to like, you know, go outside of that or like bend or break what I really want.
Mm.
At a certain thing.
Yes.
I mean, we'll see what happens with that. We'll see like if that actually is what happens, but me being like optimistic, I hope that a lot of artists like are like hyped about that. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's great. No, I mean, there's so many things. I mean, I think, I recently had a conversation with an A&R at Warner, and he was talking about how their whole organization is taking sort of a traditional approach to A&R in regards to actually going to shows now, like restarting to go to shows because they found out quite quickly, maybe not quite quickly, but over the past 5 years, that signing artists off TikTok didn't really work because they found out that the people that would go to the shows only knew the 20-second bit that was on TikTok, and quickly realized that there wasn't that relationship. There wasn't the audience sort of artist relationship that they were hoping once that artist started touring, and that they needed to be good live before they even signed them. Anyway, I believe that Warner is taking this approach of sort of really actually going after artists that are really in it. And I'm really stoked on that. But on that, on the TikTok thing, and to wrap up this segment here, just been having these conversations on the podcast, but also off mic about what the next move is after TikTok. What do you think? It doesn't need to be an elaborate thing. Just what do you think? Is it another social media? Is it, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
Part of me says, I hope not. Like, I hope
sure.
I hope it's not another like content forward platform like TikTok is.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think TikTok is like necessarily the worst thing ever. I don't mean to come off that way. I just think that at the end of the day, hearing that the A&R from Warner is going back to like the old school way of like, okay, let's actually go and see these artists.
Yeah.
Let's not look at a 30-second clip on TikTok and how they've edited it and how they've, you know.
Yeah, the audience interaction, whatever.
Yeah, let's go and see like how they are. Like, let's go watch them live. Let's go like actually hear the music. Let's go see how the audience engages with them. Let's just see how good they are. Like that, really. That's at the end of the day, I think that's the core of everything, right?
Yeah,
it's how like authentic and how sincere and how like interesting is the music? How exciting is the music?
Yeah,
everything else comes after that. So I think hopefully, you know, I'm sure there's going to be another content platform. I'm sure that's going to happen. And, you know, seeing how Spotify is also trying to become like a content platform and a social media platform, it's a whole other can of worms. I really think that at least in the interim, while artists and labels and everyone are trying to figure out like where we go from here in terms of, you know, things being removed from TikTok, stuff like that. I really hope, at least right now, that it does go back to sort of the old way of like, let's actually like put the music and the artist first, and then everything else comes after that.
Fantastic. Let's move on to the origin story here. Can you give me a lowdown on where you grew up and your creative upbringing, family, friends, school, anything like that?
Yeah, so I grew up in Lauren Park, which is a little suburb in Mississauga, about 20 minutes west of Toronto.
Yeah.
And grew up playing guitar. I started playing guitar when I was 7 years old. And my little brother, who's 2 years younger than me, started playing drums.
Nice.
At the same time, he was obviously younger than me, so he was a little maniac drummer. That's 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
And we actually had a room in our basement growing up called the Rock Room, where we just had a drum set, a guitar, and an amplifier, and we would just like try to play some music. And it was like, you know, the Black Keys and Green Day and AC/DC and the Beatles, stuff like that. We would just like a guitar and a drummer, you know, guitar player and a drummer, just trying to, you know, play a song. The most fun thing ever. It got to the point where like once we got a little bit older, we were like, you know, 10, 11, 12, we would like invite our friends over who were getting into it, and like one would be playing guitar. We never really found a full bass player at that point.
Unfortunate.
But it was became like just a bit of a jam session thing. So that was like a huge thing for me growing up.
Yeah.
In terms of like music, like what I was listening to.
Yes.
feel like most people, it's super inspired by my parents and by my family and just by like my close friends at the time. So my dad, it was always, you know, in the car listening to Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, the Eagles, Fleetwood Mac, and then like Frank Sinatra, stuff like that. So it was very much that era.
Yeah.
Elton John, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom was like Sheryl Crow, more like the 80s Fleetwood Mac, so like Tango by the Night, like all that stuff. Like that was really what I was into and what my mom was playing that I really, you know, was excited about.
Yeah.
And then I remember there was a moment when I was, I don't know how old I would have been, but I remember my older cousin playing the live Green Day DVD Bullet in a Bible at his house. I think it's like a birthday party. I don't know what it was, but I vividly remember like seeing that and being like, what is this? Like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Right.
Pretty sure like a week later, like I asked my dad to buy me that. And that ended up being my first real CD was Green Day's Bullet in the Bible. Like the live, not even American Idiot, it was the live version.
Yeah.
And that was like the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. And it was a CD, right? Like a CD. Was it a DVD? I may have misunderstood beforehand with your cousin. Was it like a DVD, live concert?
Yeah, so he was watching it.
He was watching it. Yeah.
And it was like, have you seen it? It's like partially in black and white and like,
no, but
it's all filmed in England. And it was like right when they blew up after American Idiot. Like that was nice. Huge. Seeing that was like, oh my God. Like,
yeah,
this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And then that sort of snowballed into like playing with my brother, stuff like that.
Okay, great.
So that's like my origin with it. And then as I got older, I, you know, started playing guitar a little more seriously and like got into like my John Mayer phase of, you know, playing a little bit more intricate stuff.
Sure.
But then having like my huge Radiohead phase, which I know you and I have talked at length about.
Yes.
About Radiohead.
And that's crazy.
Radiohead and Smile and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then of course Bon Iver, and then just like how that's all evolved to like me just always looking for new music today. It's started with Green Day and Billy Joel and Springsteen, and has become whatever it is now.
And like you said, we have a lot of the same like early musical influences. And before we pressed record on this, we were talking about sports. I was heavily into sports as a kid, and as a player, but also as a fan. Of just like watching. I also saw on your LinkedIn earlier that you went to sort of like a sports management program out of university, or in university rather, and then after that into more of like a music business degree for your master's. I wanted to ask you about the sports thing and how sort of that came about, and then going into the music business program at Berkeley Valencia. Let's start, I guess, from sports. Were sports like a big thing like early on for you as well?
Honestly, not really. That's the crazy part.
Whoa, okay.
So
okay.
Like when I was a kid, I was never like an athlete. I never really did any of that. Like I played some sports in high school. I played rugby in high school.
Okay.
Loved watching hockey, loved playing like floor hockey with all my friends and stuff like that. Like, that was always a big thing for me. And then I don't know why, but when I was in high school, I became sort of fascinated with just like sport business, like
running
teams and like building teams and stuff like that. Like the whole video game part of it too.
Yes, I was going to say,
That was huge. When I was 15, that was the coolest thing ever. I guess, I don't know. I was a 17-year-old boy and I was just like, sport management seems like a great idea for me. decided to pursue it. And honestly, I loved it. Like I really enjoyed it. And, met a lot of amazing people and did a lot of really cool things. And just experienced a lot of cool things. Like at one point I went to the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony. It was the year that like Martin Brodeur was inducted and Martin St. Louis. And like,
yeah, wow.
That was a crazy experience.
Yeah.
Did some cool internships. I interned at the Primetime Sport and Entertainment organization that's like co-chaired by Brian Burke and Trevor Whiffen of the London Knights. And
that's great.
I got to experience that and like run different events and learn all about sales and partnerships and stuff like
that.
That was really cool. And then Yeah, it was definitely a different experience and different from what I do now, but also laid a lot of the groundwork, I think. Like, a lot of it's transferable. It's still entertainment business, really, at the end of the day.
Yes.
But it's still sales. A lot of it still is very transferable. So, I was lucky. It really worked out that it was very much the same, honestly, in a lot of ways.
Well, I was actually going to ask, like, what was the transition there like in regards to, you know, finishing your degree at Brock and then going to, you know, music business masters? Was it like, were you feeling it in your bachelor's that like you wanted to get back to the music thing?
Yeah.
Like, was that always like number one kind of thing?
Yeah, for sure. And
okay,
it may have been a case where, like, I don't know, when you're, it's a crazy thing. Like, you're kids are 17 and they're asked to like decide what they want to do with their life.
Oh yeah.
It's like crazy.
And yeah.
At the time, of course, as I mentioned, sports seemed like the cool thing to do and seemed really cool. And again, I really enjoyed it, but I always really knew in my heart that music is where I belonged. To the point where, like, a lot of my friends at Brock would be like telling me, like, why are you here? Like, why aren't you in a music program? Because I'd be talking about like Radiohead and stuff, and they'd be like,
sure.
So like I always knew, like, whether like I actually admitted it or not, or whether it was like a conscious thing, I always knew in my heart that music is where I wanted to be and where I should be.
Yeah.
And I never really gave it the full thought until COVID, really, because I graduated in 2020.
Yeah.
And all of my job prospects, all the stuff that, you know, I worked hard to have lined up for when I graduated, just, you know, like everyone else, just disappeared, right?
Yeah.
So it forced me to sort of refocus and think, like, okay, what do I actually want? Like, is what I was going to do, would that have made me happy? Would that have been what I wanted to spend my life doing? Like, maybe, but also I knew deep down that like music had to be involved. So I just sort of, took a swing during COVID. I was like, I'm in lockdown. I don't really have anything else to do at the moment. Why don't I just apply for the Berklee program? Really weird. I hadn't honestly had heard of it before. And then it came across, there's like an ad on like Instagram or something. So weird.
They got you.
Yeah. And I saw it. And I was just like, whoa, like this exists. Like I didn't even know that existed, that a program like that existed.
Yes.
And I was just like, okay, let's just do it. Let's just apply. Let's spend a week applying.
Yeah.
If I don't get in, whatever, at least I tried. At least it was, you know, at least I was productive and I did something.
Yeah.
And then, I was asked to do an interview and then eventually got in, and it was like the craziest thing ever. It kind of put the wheels in motion in terms of, you know, what I've done and where I've gone since then. So,
yeah. And for those who don't know, this is in Spain, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So the program is called, it's a long name. It's Masters of Arts in Global Entertainment in the Music Business. And it was in Spain because all of their graduate programs are done in Valencia, Spain. So they have just like a satellite campus in Valencia where they do like my program, they do a music and production program, they do a film and TV scoring program.
Yeah.
And then they do like a performance program. So it's a crazy fantastic thing. It's a crazy thing. Four programs that are held there. And then they do like some other like study abroad things where like some students will go spend a semester there from like they'll go from Boston to their first semester.
Yeah.
But it's just like such an interesting thing because everything there is only a year long. Like my program, other programs are only a year long. So 12 months.
Okay.
Back to back. And then it switches the next year. So it's like a whole new group of people the next year from all over the place. So it was just weird. It was like a crazy fever dream. Like one of those things where like sometimes I wake up and I'm like, did that even happen? Did I like live in Spain for a year? Like what was crazy to think about that even exists, like that happened.
What were some of the highlights for you?
I mean, the highlight of living in Europe was pretty cool. Like,
just that fact alone,
like, going away from the school part, like I've never lived outside of the GTA before.
Right. Sure.
Up until that point, I'd never even been to Europe before. I'd never really been to anywhere in the world, to be honest, before, after that, like, or before that. I'd been to like Florida a few times as a kid.
Sure.
That would be it.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, beach places in the Caribbean, stuff like that. Other than that, I'd never really traveled.
Right.
Then all of a sudden being like, oh, I'm just going to move by myself to a little beach town in Spain. And, you know, I was the only Canadian in the program. I didn't know anyone else going into it aside from like the basic Facebook group intros.
Those for sure.
So yeah, I was sort of just like forced to just, you know, insert myself into that situation and meet all these people. And
fantastic.
It was a crazy experience because not only am I like in a new place.
Yeah.
But I'm with people that I've never met before. They're from all different parts of the world. Like, it was a crazy thing. And also Spain is like a wild country because they still do like siesta and everything.
Oh yeah.
For those who don't know, like Valencia specifically as well, because it's a smaller town and whatever, it's like less of like the tourist cities like Madrid and Barcelona. A lot of Valencia will just shut down during the day. So
yes.
Like,
if
you want to go for lunch somewhere, like you can't. Sometimes you just cannot do that.
Yeah.
If you do anything during like in the afternoon there, like you really can't. You're kind of stuck.
Yeah. My partner's is from Barcelona. She immigrated here when she was 12. Would love to even just visit that campus. Our plan is to go back to visit her family in the summertime at some point. I've been there before with her and the family, and it's been fantastic. And I'm glad that you got to even just live there for a whole year. It's really great. What was the original plan after the program? So I'm slowly going into now your position at Factor as well.
So part of the reason why I went to this, or I wanted to do this program, and I even said this in the interview when, you know, when I was being considered for it, is I didn't really know. I knew that music was a part of it. I knew that it had to be a part of my life.
Yeah.
How it was a question at the time, and I wasn't really sure. I knew that A&R was something that interested me. I had no idea what it was. I just sort of knew that, you know, it's like working with artists on like with labels and stuff, and, you know, helping them with their creative pursuits and a lot of that stuff. That's really all I knew about it. And I was like, okay, well, that sounds interesting. So in my first semester there, I took the A&R class, and right away it was just like, okay, yeah, this is it. Like, this has to be it. Like, that class is really interesting because for the first few weeks, we would just get assignments of like, choose like some lyrics that you think represent really amazing songwriting and present it to the class as to why, or choose someone that has, or pick an artist that has a great voice, present it to the class and explain why they have a great voice.
Right.
Stuff like this, where it kind of sounds silly when you hear that.
Yeah.
But like being able to practice articulating those specific things.
Yes.
Was such a skill that I didn't really know. Like I realized that I was pretty good at it, but I didn't realize like how much of a skill that was. Of like, this person has a great voice. Okay, why do they have a great voice? What else was there? There's like, we had to give an example of like great stage craft, like great performance. Why? We had to talk about someone who has like very unique artistry, like a very unique, like their artistry is like very different compared to others, or like is just very much authentic in themselves. Like, why is it that way?
Yeah.
So learning how to actually talk about music beyond like the surface level, like, oh, this is great. Really love this. This is really cool. Like, and actually.
Yeah.
Forcing yourself to like dive into it and really dissect why you think it's great or why it's not great.
Yes.
Interesting, because it would always then cause or create a discussion with the class as to like someone to be like, actually, I think this.
And yes.
Wrong, but it just sort of forced us to really talk about it. This is good.
And creating like a vocabulary and like a library of references as well, as in like, oh, that person, I remember them talking about why they thought this person had a great voice or whatever, or why this artist was unique. And then you add that to your bank and then you can reference it yourself and some other things. And I completely, completely agree. Yeah. And see the value in that, in just that sort of exercise. Yeah.
And then, fantastic. Of course, it actually became like actual coursework. Like we had to do we had to present like a producer, why we think that a certain producer should be added to someone's producer, like network.
Right.
And who they think would be like a good producer for a specific artist, stuff like that. We had to like present like pitches. We had to pitch an artist who we think is ready to be signed, and then pitch an artist who should be signed as like a development act, like someone that we can really like work with to like develop them.
Yeah.
It was really cool. And like, very again, cool. forced us to like, they all had to be unsigned. They all had to be like very new artists. So it forced us to actually scout artists and like think about it. And
yeah,
it was like
practical, very going through the motions of actually going through like a pitch to your label, basically. Yeah.
So then
label being your class or your school or whatever.
Yeah. Yes. Great transition. I was going to talk about So after that, we then going into the fall of the first year, the first semester, we had to all decide like what our thesis was going to be.
Yeah.
Which is the crazy thing too. We only have 12 months here. We have to do 3 semesters of school and we have to do and defend a thesis, like write and defend a thesis, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about that program is that they also allow you to do like positions, like you can like fill a role and have that be your thesis.
So
about the Berkeley Valencia campus is they run Disruption Records, which is the student run record label.
Yes.
So I luckily became the head of A&R for the Berkeley record label.
Okay.
And that was an insane experience because you pretty much have to start at zero when everyone assumes their positions.
Yeah.
You have like 2 semesters, so 8 months, let's say.
Yeah.
Pitch, sign, market, advert, whatever, promote all of the artists that you want to sign, and then release all their music, like have campaigns for all of their albums and stuff. It was honestly like an insane concept. And I remember talking with them after, being like, with the professors after, being like, this is crazy that like we only have 8 months to like pretty much like build and then execute a record label.
Yeah. And then it restarts for the next cohort?
Yeah, it does. Crazy. It goes back to zero. So
those artists are basically like, this is sort of crude, but they're dropped after those 8 months. Like it's not like the next cohort like continues to support.
Yeah, like I mean, there's some things that we can do. Like we tried to get some sync placements for people and stuff like that. And
right.
Of course, a lot of that stuff takes time. And
yeah.
Right. So there's some carryover work, but in terms of like signing like artist to licensing deals and stuff like that all resets.
Right.
And it was cool because as the head of A&R, we sort of collaborated and decided that we should run an imprint model. So instead of everyone just like freely being like, I want to sign this person. We made like specific imprints that focused on specific genres or different like parts of the world.
Right.
That were obviously run by students who like were super passionate or like experts in those specific fields in the genre. Or, based on genre and everything. And they would sort of find the artists that they thought would be good fits and then and went from there. We released a bunch of music. Crazy.
That's fantastic.
It was like insane. It was like pretty much like a boot camp for artists because a lot of them were like obviously like brand new artists. And we treated it and we wanted the artists to treat it as a bit of a boot camp, as like, okay, like this is the first time I'm actually releasing something. Let's actually learn about it. Let's put a single out. Let's learn where our listeners are coming from and then let's build on it for the next one, stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was a crazy experience. And that kind of taught me too that like perhaps A&R is maybe where I should be. And that's led me to where I am now.
We'll talk about that a little bit later. Just wanted to go into your current position at Factor. What is Factor? to begin this segment here. And for those who don't know what Factor is.
Yeah, so Factor is a big acronym, and it stands for the Foundation Assisting Canadian Talent on Recordings. And we're essentially the main organization in Canada that helps fund independent artists across Canada.
Yeah.
That's really the gist of it, honestly.
No, that's great.
like the government of Canada and you know, Heritage Canada or Canadian Heritage obviously allows or budgets a certain amount of money that to be funded into music every year. And it's sort of the mechanism to make sure that that money is used properly and is being given to, you know, artists who are using it to create projects that are, you know, boosting their careers or really helping them sort of advance in their careers, whether it be releasing an album or going on tour or creating music videos and shooting music videos or
you know,
marketing their music, stuff like that. And it really can go from funding someone who's brand new, who's put out maybe a couple songs, but is still developing their voice and their vision and their artistry, to artists who have been in it for a long time, who maybe, you know, wanting to go on tour and promote their latest record and, you know, do all that stuff. Because as we all know, everything's super expensive and
yes,
it's never easy to really execute a lot of those things. So totally. Yeah, we're essentially the company that tries to make that happen for a lot of independent artists across Canada.
It's fantastic. What does your job entail as I saw on LinkedIn, the title is just project coordinator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a vague title, but.
Sure. Yeah.
Essentially what a project coordinator at Factor does, like what I do is we're just essentially the point person for all the artists that come to Factor for funding. Submit an application to, you know, get funding for whatever their project is. So in terms of like what I do and like what a day to day really is.
Please.
Like an artist, like will reach out to me or will sign up for, you know, we'll create profiles in the Factor portal. I'm not sure if you're familiar with any of that stuff, Matt. I'm sure you are.
A little bit.
Yeah. So the way that it works is like they'll create a profile and then they'll be assigned a project coordinator. If it's me, I email them.
Yeah.
And then essentially it's about, for me at least, it's about like building relationships with these artists and trying to really get a sense of like where they're at in their career and just helping guide them the best I can in terms of, you know, applying for funding and helping them really decide what the best avenue is for them going
forward. Yeah, I put myself in the listener's shoes a lot of the times when I'm just like asking questions and typing up this episode brief and stuff like that. And I feel it, that's really interesting and important to highlight that there are project coordinators at Factor that can help just even guide, you know,
how much guiding
do you get artists that are just like, hey, I heard about Factor. I don't really know what's going on. I don't necessarily know what program to apply to, but here's my situation. And can you sort of guide me to where I could apply to?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's a lot.
That's a very
common thing.
Right.
I try to get them to that point of being like, a lot of artists will like be like, I want to get funding to do this and that. And then that, instead of me being like, okay, here you go. Or like, obviously not here you go. That's never how it works. instead of me being like, okay, like you, this is the program. I'll try to instead be like, okay, well, like, where are you at in your career? Like, do you want to release an album? Do you want to release, you know, an EP?
Are you
like new to it? Like where are you at right now? Because that I think is a really important thing in terms of like, let's do something that's like realistic and, you know, apply for something that, would be like the first step in like in a hopeful series of steps that will, you know, help build their career.
Right. How likely are, I just had a conversation this week about with an individual about how like there's some funding bodies that like it's important for an artist to get like the first step and then sort of almost like it opens the door to other things. Like, is it important like for you with the artist that you sort of guide to be like, okay, so here's the first sort of grant that you could sort of apply for. And then after that, we could look at like these other things kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's, I think the difference there is that it's less so important for us in terms of being like, oh, you got $1,000. Okay. That like makes it easier for us to like, you know, consider your next application. I think it's more so for me, the step thing is more so like, it's more for the artist, honestly. It's more like, okay,
where are you at?
Yeah. Yes. You've tried this.
Yeah.
The next step is totally up to you. You know, maybe you don't, maybe you want to take a pause and do something else, or maybe whatever, right?
It's
more important for the artist to sort of at least have a good understanding of like the opportunities and options that there are with like public funding bodies.
Yeah.
And it's my job to help make sure that like those decisions that they're making are like, you know, the decisions that they should be making, or maybe not that they should be making, but like are decisions that they're happy and comfortable with, and that they're knowledgeable of like the different opportunities that exist within specifically
making sure that they're well educated, but also comfortable with that process and like what like they're like in a good position to make a good choice, basically.
Yeah, like I never tell an artist like you should apply to this program,
right?
I tell them like, I'll ask them, okay, like what are your goals, what are your ambitions, like what are you trying to do this year,
right?
Based on that, I usually am just like, well, this program seems to tick a lot of those boxes.
Sure.
I would consider like looking into this program, and then that sort of starts a dialogue of then like they'll come back with questions or something, and then I'll answer those, and then
right,
just so they have a good understanding, and let them decide what's best for them, and then we go from there.
Yeah. It's great. I really do think, especially when I have people in your position on the podcast, because I feel like it's so important to have these sorts of conversations and to sort of highlight these roles and, again, organizations like Factor, specifically in Canada. I wanted to ask you about the importance of just grants and funding in the Canadian music industry and how you see it, because I feel like it's like one of the major pillars of our industry, because there are some countries like the United States where there is no really public funding at all. And Great Mug, by the way.
Thank you. From Abbey Road.
Yeah, from Abbey Road, for those who are only listening to the podcast. So the importance of grants and funding and how sort of you see that. I really just feel like it's tremendously important to, yes, artists, but also creative organizations in the community music scene.
Yeah. I mean, everything you just said, I totally agree with. Like,
yeah,
it's interesting talking to artists from like the States.
Yeah.
About this, because while it sort of exists there, it's nowhere near the same level as it is here.
Right.
The fact that an artist can be fairly new to music, obviously there's like everything's adjudicated and, you know, there's a process to everything.
Yeah.
The fact that like a new artist can be like, I'm going to apply to this, I'm going to like really work at this application and really, you know, put like some effort and passion into this, and then get some funding to then, you know, open up some doors and, you know, make it possible for them to pursue music, I think is really important. Obviously, that's a really big thing for just arts in general, not even just music, just arts in general, really. It's huge because everything is just becoming more and more expensive. And, you know, there's less studio time to a lot of people. And it's just like, it's obviously becoming more difficult. And obviously like the whole bedroom pop phase and everything of being able to like have a home studio and do stuff on your laptop is really big too. But for artists that want to like take that next step and like really develop themselves and actually have, you know, money to put like behind promoting their music and creating assets for it, stuff like that is like super important. And that's sort of that's what Factor is really all about, really, is just helping create those opportunities for independent artists so that those things can happen and that we can really help keep building and pushing the Canadian music industry forward.
It's fantastic. What can artists, just very big overview, just for the listeners as well, what can artists apply for at Factor specifically?
Yeah, so if you're, I was talking a lot about like new artists, like artists who are just sort of starting. If you've, if you have like a basis, like you've like, you know, beyond the beyond like just, you know, having a Spotify or something like that, like a Spotify profile, like if you're yeah. brand new and you're releasing music for the first time and you've done sort of those basics first steps, you can apply for artist development, which is essentially just, it gives you funding towards a year of whatever artist development activities you really want to do. A lot of the time it's recording an EP or a couple songs. A lot of the time it's recording a song and a video or, you know, recording some songs and then going on tour, like doing a little mini tour, stuff like that. So that's open to anybody. Obviously there's some eligibility requirements and stuff like that, but you can be like, if you're brand new, you can go in and apply for that program.
Yeah.
Then there's like the jury sign recording programs. Yes. Those are the bigger ones. That's if you want to go and record an album and then, you know, put some funding behind the album in terms of like going on tour, promoting it, shooting music videos, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's also open to the public, really. Obviously, there's like a huge application you have to fill out, and not huge. I don't want to, that sounds scary when I say huge, but
sure.
Obviously there's an application you have to fill out that requires a lot of things, and then everything's reviewed by a jury. So there's a misconception too, where like people think that I like make decisions on stuff like that.
Sure,
I have nothing
sure,
any
sure.
of that stuff. That's not me at all.
Yeah.
But in terms of like the programs that are available, those are like the two big ones. And then of course, once you reach a certain level as an artist, you can then start applying for like standalone tour support and video funding. And there's also support for like labels and stuff like that and music companies if they want to help, or if they want to get funding to help build their companies. And whether it's like an artist management company or, you know, a label, stuff like that. If they want to like get funding to do all that stuff, they can. If it's like a festival or some sort of event and they're looking for sponsorship funding, that's also something that we provide.
I'll hit you up.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Fantastic. Well, that's great. I hope the people listening can get, you know, inspired or maybe even educated on what Factor is and what are some of the sort of programs that some people could apply for. I think it's really fantastic. Yeah. And it's really important as well for artists and, you know, people in the music industry specifically to sort of take advantage of these systems that we have here, because, you know, I hear sometimes from people on juries or people at these organizations that there isn't enough people that even apply. So I think it's really important to just apply as artists.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely do get a lot of applications and a lot of the programs, but at the same time, like, that shouldn't discourage someone from applying, right? Everyone,
exactly.
You know, passionate, if it's something that you really want to do and, you know, take that next step, then of course apply. And that goes to not just Factor, that goes to any public funding body and any art form that you're pursuing, right?
Yeah.
And an interesting thing that I've noticed too, especially since working at Factor, is like looking at all the different event posters or like walking into like Cops Records and going into the Canadian section and just like picking up an album and seeing on the backside, just seeing the Factor logo on the back and just seeing how public funding bodies in Canada have played such a big role in, you know, helping push the arts forward is really cool.
And honestly, just like the viability of it. Because you said, like, as you said, rather, it's getting very expensive to do things now. And it's just very important. Thanks for that piece. And of course, go check out Factor, everybody. And, you know, hit up Tyler for some project coordination. Tyler, when we met about a month ago for the first time, we had just exchanged some texts over socials and stuff. But when we met about a month ago, you told me that your ideal position would be in the A&R. Now we've talked about it through your experience at Berkeley, Valencia and all that stuff, that your passion really is just discovering artists. And you've sent me so many, not so many, but we've talked about some new artists just through text exchanges and stuff like that as well. I just wanted to ask you where your passion for A&R comes from and just discovering and supporting artists as well.
Yeah, I mean, what I talked at the top of this about like going to shows and how that's my favorite thing ever.
Yeah.
Like close second would be like listening to an album for the first time.
Yeah.
Is like one of my favorite things to do ever. Like just whether I know the artist or not, having like some sort of base understanding of who they are, like what they're all about. I usually look at like what label they're on, you know, if they are on a label.
Yeah.
And then it's like listening to an album front to back and just listening to it and like, and just seeing what it's all about. And just discovering these new artists and discovering, I guess not even discovering new artists overall, just like, just seeing what's coming out and just seeing what's exciting now and what excites me and what I think would excite other people. And, you know, that's why I shared music with you and a lot of people is I just like, I love being able to like discover something and then share it with somebody else and then have that end up being something that they love. I don't really know where the passion of that came from, to be honest. I think that's just always something I've done. I've always been really interested in just like hearing something of really exciting for the first time and then sharing that with somebody and help and creating that experience for somebody else has always been a huge thing of mine, like a huge passion and just something I've always done since I was a kid, honestly.
What do you think, or why do you think it's important to discover new artists for just even music lovers, as in just like fans of music, but also for people also just in the industry as well, the importance of discovering new artists? Where do you stand on that?
I think that's really important because, I mean, there's just so much talent out there. Like there's just so much talent. There's so much authentic new voices that are always emerging in all art forms, but music especially. I think it's so important to just hear what's new coming out of different parts of the world.
Yeah.
What's new coming out from different generations, like what young people are really interested in making now. Like a couple of years ago, there was the big windmill scene in London where all of a sudden, like Black MIDI became really popular.
Yeah.
Black Road became really popular. Like so many bands came out of that scene. And they're all young people. They're all like in their early 20s.
Yeah.
And it's all like post-punk, like very like avant-garde, like jazz inspired, like intricate, beautiful, amazing music that came out of like a scene in London, out of a venue called the Windmill in like South London. Like, yeah, that's such a crazy thing. And just like seeing that, like that has then snowballed into like just the emergence or the reemergence, I guess, of post-punk in general. Yeah. Huge. Like Idols are huge now. They're obviously not from London or the UK, but like Turnstile has blown up. Like they've become really huge now. Like I think just like always looking for the new, for new music is such an, it's just, I think it's really important to stay current and really important to just like hear what people are trying to create nowadays and just stay up with, you know, what's going on in music now, as opposed to just like latching on or just listening to the same artists and albums that you've always been listening to. I don't know.
Totally.
Some people love to do that. And that's more of a comfort and interest thing. But I think people in the music industry, people who don't do that are doing themselves a disservice and are doing the industry a disservice. I think it's really important to really keep up with everything.
Yeah.
And like, also you discover so many of your favorite artists, like a couple of years ago, like Dijon.
Yes.
Grew up out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's evolved and he's become huge. And then that has now led to McGee having his own career. Obviously he came up at the same time as Dijon. It wasn't one really before the other, but
yeah.
Now, because McGee was working with Dijon, now he's sort of at the forefront because his new record just came out. And
yes,
everybody I know in music is like obsessed with that album right now.
Yeah.
That all just comes from the effort of just like discovering an artist and then like looking at who they're working with and then listening to the music of the people who work with them. And
yeah,
it's a continuous thing. It's just, there's always stuff to discover and stuff, new stuff to listen to.
Yeah. And while you're talking, I'm thinking about how like 30, maybe 40 years ago, you can go to like a record shop and go discover. And I grew up around records in regards to going to see the liner notes and being able to go see, easily go see rather, you know, who's playing drums specifically in my childhood, or like who is a label, as you said, when you're discovering a new artist and going see who's producing, who, you know, who's singing backgrounds, who's the band, who's a whole bunch of things, who's publishing it. And now I go like on AllMusic or whatever to discover these things. Do you feel, tying back to the record store thing, it's like, I feel like that was a place of discovery, like of music discovery, where you could be going to the counter and being like, okay, what do you got new this week? You know, and people going like weekly to the record store to get their new music or seeing it like on the radio and stuff like that. How do you think like DSPs, digital streaming platforms, have influenced like people's like discoverability the years?
That's the whole thing. I mean, talk about trends in the industry. Like that's obviously, as we all know, that's become one of the biggest things, is how DSPs have completely influenced discovery of music.
Yes.
And in a good way and sometimes less good ways.
Yeah.
Artists releasing music perhaps for the first time, or new artists releasing music. And, you know, for them, a lot of them think that like, oh, this all, you know, if I don't get playlisted, if I don't get added to specific things and, you know, like some specific editorial playlist on Spotify or
Apple Music,
then like, oh, then that song is going nowhere. That song wasn't very good.
Right.
Such a toxic, horrible way to think about it. But
yeah.
But that's so, I understand, of course, why an artist would maybe have that mentality of being like, for the song to become popular, it has to be pushed on a playlist.
Yeah.
Is like, yeah. That's just the way that it goes now.
Isn't that crazy?
It's insane. And like, I mean, I discovered a lot of music from those playlists. I mean, I honestly don't really ever listen to those playlists, but just like the autoplay feature on Spotify.
Yeah.
Like, did you see that article a few years ago now about Pavement, band Pavement, and how one of their B-sides like became their most popular song on Spotify because it happened to be an autoplay song that came on after a specific genre?
I didn't hear about that, but a few years ago, I was playing with Elio and we were opening for Charlie XCX in Europe, and we did, we were with Charlie when she did the Primavera Festival, and the lineup was Casey Musgraves, Charlie, Tame Impala, and then Pavement.
Yes.
And and I didn't know who Pavement was. And they were like, after Tame. I was like, who is this? It was supposed to be the Strokes, and they got replaced by Pavement. And I was like, who is this? I have no idea. And then I saw them from backstage, but the crowd was going insane. And I was just so surprised to hear about a band going after Tame Impala at one of the biggest festivals in the world and being one of the stars of the entire festival. Cool. So no, to answer your question, I don't even know who Pavement is still to this day.
Well, Pavement, bit of a history thing here. I love Pavement. I think they're such a unique, cool band. They're essentially like a bar band from the 90s that were so good and then just blew up and put out some amazing records in the 90s. And never ever lost the feel of being a bar band. Like, I'm sure when you saw them live, of course everyone there is so crazy talented and there's like 10 people on stage, but like it's just a couple of guys playing rock.
Yes, because I saw them backstage and I was like, who the heck are these guys? They're going after they're going after Tame Impala, one of my favorite bands, and it's just like these dads really just going up and playing rock music. I'm like, what is happening? What's happening? Yes, exactly. And it felt like that backstage. It was crazy. It was crazy. Yeah.
The fact that you like were close to Stephen Malkmus, the lead singer, is like crazy to me. He's like, but going back to what I was saying is there's an interview with Stephen Malkmus. I forget what, what publication it was on, what website or magazine it was in.
Yeah.
But, essentially, like he was at a record store flipping through records and a song came on the radio or came on the speakers And he was just like, this song, this is a really good song. Like, I really like this. Like, what is this? And it was his own song. It was a B-side that blew up Spotify called Harness Your Hopes. It's like, I think it's still their biggest song on Spotify. And it literally is a B-side. And the reason that song became so popular at the time, this was like a few years ago. This is a song from the 90s.
Yeah.
It was an autoplay song that just happened to be in the algorithm that came on after people listened to artists of that genre. So like Sonic Youth or like The Replacements, like any of those like 80s, 90s.
Right.
Garage rock bands.
Yeah.
Harness Your Hopes B-side always was the next song if they had the autoplay feature on. And it blew up. It blew up.
Crazy.
So and then he rediscovered the song and they loved the song. And then Pavement like got back together. Like they weren't really touring for a while or making music for a while. And now they're back together. It's crazy.
He rediscovered his own song.
Yeah.
That's nuts. That's completely nuts. But man, that is fantastic. And a story of rediscovering your own music through the algorithm is hilarious. But it also just speaks to the power of DSPs now and how discovery has been at the forefront of consumption, not only for the music industry, but also TikTok. Because if you're listening to, if you're a listener to this podcast, I've talked about this so much, but it's about how TikTok is now, it's a discoverability platform in regards to comparing it to, Instagram, where it's like it was all based on who you followed. Now the primary feed on TikTok is all about who you don't follow on the For You page.
Yeah.
And taking your algorithm into account. And that's what Spotify's done in that autoplay feature. So it's really interesting. Anyway, just my two cents on that. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off. I was going to say also a testament to how prolific Pavement is, the fact that they've made so much music and they've, so many of them are just like B-sides or on like rarities, like albums.
Yeah.
For something like that to like be so good and then become like their biggest song now. It's a testament to how prolific Pavement is. Everyone here should check out Pavement.
Yeah, check out Pavement, everybody. Yeah. Tame Impala open for them.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are you currently looking forward to? This is a wrap-up question. What are you currently looking forward to right now, in your life, but also in your professional life?
Good question.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to, and I mean, obviously, there's like always music that's coming out. That's stuff to look forward to. There's always shows that are happening that I always look forward to. As I mentioned a couple of times, those are the two big things for me. So
yeah,
I'm never not excited to listen to a new album by an artist that I like. And I'm never not excited to go to a show. Honestly, a show in general, I'm always excited to go to shows.
Yeah. 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 Are there some albums that you're looking forward to or some shows that you're looking forward to?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, Elio has an album coming out in April.
Hey, all right. Yes. Very exciting. Cool. It slaps.
A lot of people sort of in our circle or people that I know obviously worked on that. So that's an exciting thing and always happy to support friends and listen to what they're doing and stuff like that. Vampire Weekend, love them. They have an album coming out.
Yes.
Trying to remember who has albums coming out, like off the top of my head on the spot here, but those two for sure.
Yeah. Are there some artists that have not announced that an album's coming out, but that you're looking forward to like their next sort of release, like after like an album that you loved previously?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. That's a good question. So
yeah.
I talked about the windmill scene in London.
Yeah.
And I briefly mentioned the band Black Country New Road.
Yeah.
Have you listened to Black Country New Road?
Did no,
you
listen? Okay. I have not. I've listened to Black Midi, but not.
Especially as a Radiohead fan, like as somebody who's into that stuff, like check out their album for I think it's called The Ants From Up There from 2022.
Okay.
So this album came out in like February of 2022, was like one of my favorite albums I've ever heard. Like still to this day, one of my favorite albums like I've ever
heard.
And then right before the record dropped, the lead singer like quit the band because exciting mental health stuff or something going on. Obviously I won't divulge because I'm not entirely sure what the whole thing is, but I'm pretty sure it had to do with mental health stuff and him wanting to take a step back. But this album dropped with his lead singer, who's no longer in the picture. That was like mind blowing. I love that album so much.
Wow.
So then the band sort of had to reinvent themselves a little bit, and they still have the same members. But since then, they don't play any of those songs live on that album. They never play those songs live. And they were sort of forced to just like have each member bring their own songs that they've had from, you know, from their lives.
Yeah.
And just work on those songs. So they released an album last year. It was a live album. And there's like three or four different singers on the album.
Okay. Because
each member just has stepped up with their own songs.
Sure.
So whatever their next album is, their next actual fully produced album, their like studio record album.
Yeah.
What that is, I'm stoked to hear it because I have an idea of like what it could sound like based on their last releases, but like it will be interesting. It'll be really cool.
Crazy.
That's definitely one. That's hot.
Yeah. I guess the last question, what's the dream for you? What's Tyler Appleby's dream?
I feel like it, like aspects of it change all the time, but like really the core of it would be, as I mentioned earlier, but you know, I guess hitting it home is like helping artists release projects that they love and feel really excited about and, you know, are really happy with, and then having projects go and like create new experiences for fans and like really, I guess as a kid, like I had a lot of experiences where like I listened to music or saw things for the first time, as I mentioned, like the Green Day thing and like listening to Bruce Springsteen for the first time and discovering a lot of these artists like Radiohead and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just like, and Bon Iver, as I mentioned, and just like having these experiences that like of hearing something for the first time and never forgetting it, being like, what is this? This is like incredible. This is insane. And then of course the songs attaching different meanings or having different meanings based on, you know, personal situations, stuff like that, when you heard them, who you heard them with, stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah.
But being able to like help artists create projects that they're really excited about, that I really think are really cool. And then having audiences be able to like have them in their lives and like, you know, have those specific memories with those songs, is that's really what I want to help do and help create. So in terms of like the dream, I guess the dream would be like working in A&R for like a really cool independent label.
Yeah.
I mean, see, majors are amazing too, but just being able to work with like on the independent side.
Yeah.
That would be, I'm not really sure what label or where and stuff like that, but I've always been really attracted to the UK and London.
Yeah.
So perhaps there, but that's great. My dream is that.
Fantastic. Going into the last segment, the Dream Fest game. For those who have not listened to the podcast ever, we do a couple games here, one being the producer's game, one being this game here, the Dream Fest game. I basically asked my guest if they had to program a festival lineup, one night of a festival, who would the headliner be, who would be right before them as a second headliner, who would be opening, as in three acts for that night, what city it would be in or what area of the world it would be in, and then when it would be in as well, as in at what time of the year. And now I've added a few questions for Tyler, the typical food and bev question, as in if there would be one food item or a beverage that would be available that would represent Tyler, what would that be? And then for Tyler specifically, I've asked him, if there was a B stage with emerging artists that people should check out, maybe three or so, who would those artists be? So Tyler, I really open the floor to you here. However you'd like to present your Dream Fest game. I don't know if you want me to sort of go one by one here, but I give you the floor here.
Yeah. So there's a few that I honestly still don't really know, but I'm going to...
Yeah, sure. Off the top of my head. That's fine.
Really hard. Hard to think of like one headliner. I mean, obviously there's two headliners that you said, but headliner, that's a really tall task.
Yeah.
A couple ideas. I'll work up to it. But opening it, just because I've talked about them a little bit, the opener,
Yeah.
There was an opener, right?
Sorry?
Because there was an opener, right?
You said yes, yeah, opener. Yeah. It's basically three acts. Yeah.
Okay. And then the B set. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Opener, just because I've like gassed them up a lot. And I think they're amazing. Black Country, New Road.
Yeah.
And also, like, you got to listen to that album and you got to tell me what you think.
Yes. Yes, I will.
The reason I say that is because they, I don't know how many members exactly, but there's like saxophone players and like violin players and like two drummers, I think, and different back and forth, obviously guitar, piano, stuff like that. But it's just like such interesting music, and all of their live sets I've seen, I've never seen them live in person, but just on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's like mind blowing. They're crazy.
Sure.
So they're going to open. They're going to like sort of set the tone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, we'll hopefully
it's fantastic. Really well. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Second headliner. And I'm curious if you saw him when you were at Primavera, because I know he played in Porto. Second headliner, I'm going to choose Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
I've never seen Nick Cave.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be.
The reason I say Nick Cave is not only is he like a legendary, like iconic rock musician, singer, mm-hmm. who's not only had his 80s like weird sort of spooky punk phase,
yeah,
but also veered into like super emotional, sad, cathartic music. Like some of the saddest music you'll ever hear,
yeah,
is on some of the newer Nick Cave albums, I swear.
Yeah.
And of course, you being a Radiohead fan, I would highly recommend, if you haven't heard them.
Yes, I've definitely heard some Nick Cave records. And I know that specifically, I believe it's after the passing of his son, I believe. He got pretty dark.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, the album Skeleton Tree, check that one out. It's really, really sad.
Okay.
But it's like beautiful. Some of the most beautiful music I've ever heard. But the reason I'm choosing them, and him and the Bad Seeds, is because I went, when I was in Europe, I went to the Primavera Sound Porto Festival.
Yeah.
So not the Barcelona one that you were at, but I went to the Portugal version.
Yes.
And I sort of went in with like a basic understanding of Nick Cave. Like I knew the song from Peaky Blinders, like the theme song is Nick Cave.
Sure.
Stuff like that. Like I knew like the basics.
Mm-hmm.
I was like floored by how incredible Nick Cave was. Like one of the most like energetic, like stage presence, everything. It was crazy. Like I was like shook. Like it was one of those things where like my friends and I were like, let's just go check out a song or two. We stayed for the entire thing.
Sure.
We watched the entire set. Like wow. Blue. It was incredible.
Yeah.
So Nick Cave would be like second behind the headliner, just because I'll never forget that experience. And I want that
again.
I want people to experience that.
Sure, like, sure. Was,
and of course he has a huge fan base too. So like people would be down to go see Nick Cave.
Yeah, yeah.
Headliners between two artists, I think, for me. And it's between Radiohead.
Yeah.
Because not only are they like an amazing live band, but they're also like prolifically an amazing festival band.
Yes, that is true.
Like my heart early when I was thinking about this was like, I could say Bruce Springsteen, but like, he's not really a festival artist. Like,
right.
Obviously he's played festivals.
Yeah, yeah.
If I want to see Bruce Springsteen, I'm just going to go see Bruce Springsteen. I'm not going to go to a festival.
Right. Sell out a stadium kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've done that in New Jersey, which is crazy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So like my heart was originally thinking that, or like Paul McCartney, but again, same thing. If I want to see Paul McCartney, I want that to be like a
full event.
Sound experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think Radiohead would be an interesting one. The other one I was thinking was The National.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because also a prolifically amazing festival.
Yeah.
Got the whole range of emotions there. Got like their rock and dad songs, and they've got their like
super
music as well.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to stick with Radiohead. Also amazing. Because I know they then go to that. So
there's
one person in the door.
Sure. Have you know about Big Red Machine, of course?
Yes, of course.
Okay. For those who don't know Big Red Machine, collaboration with Aaron Dessner and Justin Vernon, and they just put out a record But you know, their first record is also amazing. I implore the listeners to go check that out.
It's big, incredible. It's like, yeah. Honestly, that's one of the records that I share with people the most.
The first one?
Well, both, but this, actually the second one specifically, but both are amazing. But
yeah.
That they put out, because like their songs with Taylor Swift on there, like that's crazy. Taylor Swift, her own songs on this album.
And yeah.
They're pretty much her song. Like she's singing the entire thing. Like,
yeah, it's
insane.
Crazy.
And then like Robin Pecknold from the Fleet Foxes is on there.
Yes.
And,
yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, I think it's a brilliant project. I love Big Red Machine.
Where would this festival be?
I'm going to say Spain. And I'm going to say, I was going to say Madrid, but Madrid already has its own festival. Madrid has Mad Cool. Primavera is now half in Barcelona, half in Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to go with what I know and say Valencia, because it's a little beach town. There's so much to do there.
Fantastic.
A lot of locations you could host it at.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's just an amazing city. A lot of like cool like restaurants and like shops, and the beach is there. And
yeah,
I'm gonna say Valencia.
And when in the year? Like a summer festival?
Yeah, probably June. Not like August, because it just gets too hot.
Yeah,
but June, like around the same time, I guess, as Primavera and Mad Cool.
Yeah,
ideally when I would put it.
Great. And then a food and beverage, or food or beverage, or food and beverage. Are there some specific things that you like?
I'm somebody who likes like different things. Like, sure. Of course, like sometimes you go to a festival or something and like based on price, because sometimes everything's just outrageous.
Sure, sure.
It's just like, okay, I'll just get like the same thing I'll get and at any other venue.
Yeah. But yeah.
Such a weird thing. And I know you said like to choose something that's like, face like that represents me. It doesn't really represent me at all, to be honest. It's just like something I've had.
That's okay.
But last summer I went to a music festival in Salt Lake City, Utah, of all places.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Like Pavement was actually there another time.
Okay.
Pavement connected to him.
Yeah.
But it was like them and the Strokes and the AAS and like a bunch of really cool indie artists.
Wow.
But they had such a cool food truck selection.
Okay.
And one of the things that I got, because like for some reason the line for it was never that long, is they had like jerk chicken burgers.
Okay.
Like, I think I was the only one of like my group that had like had that before. And I was just like, yo, this is what you want. This is what you want.
Sure.
I got it. And then like slowly people started like catching on. And by the end of it, like everyone was just like, yo, like this is the best thing I've ever eaten in my life. Like,
crazy.
So like so random. So okay. Random. But something like that, maybe not that specifically, but something like that, where it's just like, not just like a burger and fries, or not just like a slice of pizza, like something that's like actually like.
Right. Meat. Right. Great.
Now that you can remember, I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's great. If there was a B stage with, you know, three emerging artists that people should check out, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a live thing. I just wanted you to tell our listeners, if there are three artists that they should check out, who could that be, or who should that be rather?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
Because you could go so many, you could say so many different things. There's an artist that just signed to Secretly Group called Chanel Beads.
Okay.
I think they're really interesting. They make like, it's hard to describe. It's almost like, in the same lane as like Dijon or McGee.
Okay.
Where it's like, I don't know, it's like electronic indie rock in a way, but it's not even that electronic. It's just like got some glitchy aspects to it and some very just interesting production choices. And I don't know about, I know if they're good live. I'm sure they are.
I'm sure they are good live.
But in terms of just like music that I think people would like to hear, and music that would like really do well at that type of thing, I would say Chanel Beads is one.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the others. There's so many you could say. There's an album that I sent you.
Yes.
I forget when, a few days ago maybe.
Yeah.
By a band called Frico.
Yes.
I think they're really interesting. I honestly don't know anything about them. I know that they just started releasing music, but their music is like so cathartic and just scratches like such a specific itch in my brain. It's like Bright Eyes meets like, I don't even know. Like, it's like such a weird thing, but
yeah,
it's really, really cool, cathartic, emotional indie rock. It's like, yeah, similar to like, I guess like the music of like Radiohead and Black Country New Road. It's just like such interesting music that is, has always has a payoff. That's one of the reasons I love Radiohead. It's like the payoffs of Radiohead songs are like insane.
Yeah.
Like, and like, I, there's a few songs on that new Freako album that I think it's pronounced Freako that have that quality to them. And I would love to see them live.
Yeah. One last one.
Last one. This is difficult.
Can I narrow it down for you? Is there a Canadian one? Canadian artists that you're sorry, sure, checking out?
I'm sure there are.
Yeah. I don't know if that helps you at all.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to shout out one of my buddies. I'm going to shout out a friend. There's a producer here named Harper. Have you heard of Harper?
Yes. Yeah.
So he is someone who like doesn't really perform, at least currently or in the past, he hasn't really performed. But I went to see him at school night at the Drake.
Yeah.
In October, maybe like a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just so incredible. And like his voice is so good. And I think Harper is like a really special artist and special person. And he's somebody who I think would be like perfect for that environment.
Great. And so, he produces for others and you know, is out of Kilometer if I
yeah, he's out of Kilometer. Honestly, I don't know the whole story, but I know he's out of Kilometer.
Yeah.
And he's produced on some pretty crazy albums. He's produced for like Vince Staples and Charlotte Cardin and Burna yeah. Boy. Handful of others. But
fantastic.
He was great. So I'll say him.
Cool, man. Well, that's how we conclude the episode. It's so great to have this chat and learn more about you and honestly learn more about how we're very influenced by the same stuff. I have a very yeah. similar path, and I think it's just the first conversation, even just personally, would love to hang. So there you go.
Yeah, for sure. Same to you.
Yeah. Again, thanks for coming on. For the people listening, make sure to check out his socials as well at Tyler Appleby. Stay in touch, stay in the know of what he's doing. I also want to thank those who've been listening. Yes, it is the 58th episode of the Cloud Machine Podcast, over a year. Always trying to, you know, get y'all the information that I believe it's needed to sort of get a little bit more knowledge on the music industry. Of course, Tyler's coming from you know, the Factor sort of world, funding, but also the A&R world. And just, I just really think that this episode was important to see how important discovering music is. And yeah, again, Tyler, thanks for coming on. For the people listening, please, I'm going to do it. Please leave your comment, questions, your likes, your subscribes, your review even, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. Do whatever you need to do to keep educated on the music industry and what's happening. So people, Tyler, any final words, any final remarks?
Everyone here should check out Pavement.
That's definitely one. Yeah.
And no, just love everything that you do, Matt. And you mentioned, of course, like we only really met in person for the first time like a month ago, and when you stuff with Jade at the Axis Club.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been following you and Nate's stuff for a while, and I just think everything that you guys do is really, really special and really important, and can't wait to see where it takes you from here.
Well, man, thank you very much.
And of course, thanks for having me.
Oh yeah, no, of course, it was fantastic. I'm super glad we did this. Everybody listening, please stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Thanks.